Whether they live outside or inside, all cats need parasite protection. NexGard Combo, Esofoxaleniner, Ipratropium, and Praziquantel Topical Solution is the first and only broad-spectrum parasiticide for cats that protects against fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, and treats and controls roundworms, hookworms, and tapeworms. Take protection to the next level with this easy-to-apply, one-and-done protection. Use with caution in cats with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Digestive side effects have also been reported.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. I love learning about AI. Listen, my friends, it's here. It's 2025. There's so many different modalities of it, and we have some really great information that we're going to share with you and kind of a different spin on it, because who would have thought that we would have a veterinary oncologist that would really dabble into this space? So joining us is our wonderful colleague, Dr. Christopher Pinard in the house. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me, Adam. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. The honor is all mine. It's really nice to learn about this and to share with our listeners out there. So I want to share with the listeners a little bit about your bio, and I want to get into, you know, how that kind of translated on over to, you know, what you're doing now, which is pretty cool. So Dr. Pinard is a clinical scientist and a medical oncologist at Lakeshore Animal Health Partners and an adjunct professor at the University of Guelph and CEO of Animal Health, Inc. And Animal Health integrates AI and spatial computer to enhance veterinary care, launching Hachiko in 2025, a first-of-its-kind veterinary medical record summarizer, which we're going to chat about too. And his research focuses on AI-driven biomarkers for canine and feline cancer, which I did not even know this existed, so I can't wait to learn more about this, as well as leveraging machine learning for comparative oncology. And he explores spatial computing, 3D modeling, and AI to improve patient outcomes. Dr. Pinard has co-authored many AI-focused publications and is a faculty affiliate at CARE AI. He's also a member of CAIREM, and the International Immuno-Oncology Biomarker Working Group, which is unbelievable, by the way. Fascinating that you're doing all this incredible work. But one of my personal favorites, as we were just talking before we went on, is that he served on the Moores Animal Foundation for Osteosarcoma Scientific Advisory Board and ACVIM's AI Task Force. My gosh, he's currently the guest editor of BMC Veterinary Oncology Special Issue on AI and Informatics, and his research is actively funded for next generation AI in medicine. First and foremost, thank you. Thank you for all the great work that you are doing for this profession.
Thanks, Adam. It's a great profession. And honestly, it's just really cool to be able to have this opportunity now to execute these types of modalities in veterinary medicine. I think it's such a cool stomping playground to really innovate and iterate quickly. And so yeah. I think we've got a lot of really cool things coming in the very near future.
We really do. Okay, so you're a veterinary oncologist, and tell us and the listeners a little bit about your background and how you got into, one, I was curious how you got into veterinary oncology, and then how that translated a little bit over into the AI space.
Yeah, so I'm a University of Guelph, Ontario Veterinary College, born and bred, right from the beginning. So I actually did my undergrad there, my DVM there, and then I went to Colorado State University for a clinical trials specialty internship and did a lot of work with the team there, working with some of the human hospitals as well, looking at a lot of translational oncology, which was super fun. And honestly, what got me into oncology in the first place is really my wife and I, our own dog developed cancer. And that really piqued my interest during my second year of vet school. And that really went through, and I've been full tilt ever since. And so I went back to the University of Guelph for my residency, worked with Dr. Sam Hawker as my advisor and Dr. Paul Woods. And we both like kind of all worked on this idea of immuno-oncology, or how the immune system interacts with tumors. And then I had this great opportunity after, you know, meeting a few colleagues in the area here in Toronto, which has really become a really big AI hotspot, at least in the Canadian realm, at Sunnybrook Research Institute, which is a human hospital and a subsidiary of the University of Toronto. And I got to do a postdoctoral fellowship looking at AI and women with breast cancer. And we actually wrote a paper on some translational approaches back into the veterinary space and vice versa. So again, how veterinary medicine can be sort of this innovative space to iterate, develop not only drugs, but now AI technologies and translate back to humans and how we're going to be able to do that in the future. And that really started everything in terms of my entire research program, as well as the projects that we're working on. And then now the company that we've started as well, which is heavily focused on research as well in the AI space, the veterinary AI space specifically.
So unbelievable. And on the human side, so let me ask you this. Do you think that the human side is a little faster on the AI component in the medical side versus what we're seeing in the vet space?
Yes and no. So I think yes, in the sense that we always find, whether it's oncology or any other realm of medicine, I think yes, the human space is always ahead of us. That's just, they've got more people, they've been around longer. That is just the case. But now that we see, I mean, no one listening to this podcast is unique to know that yes, we're doing more and more in the veterinary space for our pets, just like we're doing in humans. And so now that that has sort of flourished and matured, I think it's actually really interesting to look at the veterinary space, because we've got a lot less rules and regulations around utilization of AI, as well as any sort of legalities that we need to worry about in comparison to the human space. So it's actually a really, it's a double-edged sword, because it's an interesting spot to say, you can actually have companies from the human space or human medical teams come to the veterinary space and say, let's iterate fast. Let's see what we can do and drag that right back to the human space. But at the same token, we also need to be careful in the veterinary space about how quickly we're iterating and how we're implementing these tools in our day-to-day lives.
Yeah, interesting. And I'm curious, because nowadays we're talking a lot in the oncology space about liquid biopsy, for instance, whether it be urine for transitional cell carcinoma, blood biopsy for precursors. And then when I was reading your bio, you were talking about AI-driven biomarkers. So that's new to me, and I don't know if it is new to the listeners. Can you just kind of define or help me out with what that means?
Yeah, so similar to any sort of blood test or any biomarker that you would look at in blood, using artificial intelligence or artificial intelligence-based biomarkers, what we're really looking at is anything that is radiomics-based, which would be radiology-based, pathomics-based, so looking at pathology, or any other metric that you can use, whether it's natural language processing or computer vision, so your ChatGPTs or looking at images specifically, anything that you can extract data from, you can potentially correlate that with some form of clinical acumen. So one example I can give you is myself and my colleagues at the University of Guelph, we actually were funded by the American Kennel Club, and we looked at basically detecting lymph node metastasis in dogs with oral tumors. And we took a group of 50 dogs, and we were able to pre-predict, just based on the CT image itself, whether that lymph node was metastatic or not. There's a lot more ambiguity, and we can get into the weeds if you want to, but what's really cool about that is, rather than taking a dog or a human for that matter to surgery, where you remove all of the local lymph nodes and there's a lot of morbidity associated with that surgery, if we can predict with a high fidelity that this lymph node is metastatic, we don't even need to sample it anymore. Now we can start extracting that data. We can just go take that lymph node. And then you start to spiral thinking about the ways that there's actually a paper published several years ago about using MRI features to predict brain tumor histology in dogs. And it's a possible thing that we can do. And we know we have a hard time getting biopsies of brain tumors in dogs. So there's a lot of really cool ways that radiomics and radiology can be passed on to clinical acumen. One other area that I'm really interested in as well is bladder tumors. That was what all my graduate research was on, especially in the immuno-oncology space. And what's really interesting is we have a really hard time predicting or understanding like a true response, because it depends on how much the bladder is filled with urine. It can alter the radiographic or radiologic appearance on ultrasound. So again, if we can use a machine learning algorithm to actually automate the prediction or detection of tumor volume, now we start to understand actually how that patient's responding over time. So there's a lot of cool use cases for using that type of biomarker development.
Unbelievable. It really is. I mean, it just seems like there's so much space in veterinary medicine for AI to fill. And it looks like you have identified a gap that's there, and you started, I know it's ANL.ML, which is animal, like a play on the word. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So animal, so the ML is for machine learning, but animal health was really developed with my co-founder, Dr. Quan Chen Wu. I actually took an AI course, 4 years ago now over the summer. And that's where he and I met. And he's actually a Stanford and Harvard alumni. He's got more letters behind his name than I do, but wonderful individual, wonderful co-founder. And he was the professor during that course. And so he and I really got along. We started working on protein folding algorithms in dogs. And what that basically says is, like, when we look at an amino acid sequence, can we use artificial intelligence to fold those amino acids and predict the protein shape? That helps with drug development in the future. And nobody's doing that in the veterinary space. So we were actually utilizing some of those algorithms. But what started happening was I started showing up late or missing meetings with poor Quan, because honestly, I was trying to just prepare for my day, the next clinical day that I had on clinics. And so what we ended up doing was saying, well, that seems like a natural problem that we probably should fix. And so what we've done is we've gone ahead and created a platform, created a group of individuals that have a heavy focus on human medical, veterinary medical, AI. And we have developed the first natural language model for the veterinary space. And what we're able to do with that is actually extract a ton of information outside of PDFs or other types of clinical records. And now we're able to start to extrapolate that and create an understanding and models that are going to get better and better over time. So for me, this summarizes any sort of 200-page PDF referral that I get every morning that I have to review. But, you know, the opportunities here are endless, because we also proved roughly about 2 months ago that even when you take a model from the University of Toronto that's been trained on hundreds of thousands of medical records from a human hospital, it actually performs very poorly in a veterinary context. And we published that paper in Veterinary and Comparative Oncology, and it's open access if anyone wants to see that. But it was a really interesting sort of turn of events for us, where we really sort of have to reinforce that we need to develop models for the veterinary space. We can't just grab ChatGPT off the shelf because it's going to perform poorly.
Right. And it makes me, it begs the question about AI literacy in veterinary medicine overall. And when I go to these conferences, I sit in these lectures, and I feel like there's a lot of us colleagues that just aren't competent. I would say AI literacy competent, if you will, and understanding it. We're familiar with ChatGPT, but there's so much more to it. So why should veterinarians care, one, about AI literacy, and how does it impact their daily practice?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. And I can divulge a little bit of information from the AI task force. We developed a set of questions for our entire group for the ACVIM, and we're hoping to publish that very soon. But one piece of information that was really interesting that came out of that was there are a lot of people that are using tools, and by people, I mean veterinary teams, specialists and generalists, that are using software that they don't even realize algorithmic or AI is actually implicated or being used. And that's a big misnomer. And they also don't understand the limitations of things like ChatGPT about, you know, I have resident friends that are throwing clinical records into that, but they don't realize that that's being shared with the entire public repertoire to train ChatGPT's models. So, you know, I think on that AI literacy piece, there are a lot of modalities and things that we are using every day that are either coming your way or have come your way in practice. And you're going to hear a lot of marketing jargon, and people are going to tell you a lot of things. But we've got, you know, I usually have four or five questions that I recommend that everybody asks these platforms as they start coming your way. And that's simply because it's going to change the way we practice. And it's not only just from an administrative perspective, but we're already seeing the implications in radiology, and we're going to start to see these implications elsewhere as well. And it's really important that we all try to stay informed.
Yeah. And absolutely. And to your point, absolutely, with radiology, I'm thinking of, you know, cytology, clinical pathology, and just patient workflow utilization, I think. Right. And is there any other areas that you see AI changing the way we diagnose and treat patients over, say, the next 10 years?
Yeah, I think some of the other areas that are really interesting, like obviously with a cancer lens, the biomarkers piece we've already talked about, but I think we're going to establish a day where people come into a clinic and, you know, there's going to be a camera at the front of the clinic that recognizes that patient and that owner, and it's going to auto check in for you. And then that owner will have been pre-prepared for the appointment because, you know, the AI read the schedule, it knew that they were coming in. And so it's going to send text messages or information to their phone while they wait for their appointment or before they even walk in the door. And I also think the way that we see veterinarians being taught, so in vet school, I think there's going to be a lot more engagement with AI agents rather than just, you know, going and talking with a fake client. You're actually going to talk with a computer as if you're really in a simulator, which I think is great for training. But I think on the other end, basically every facet of our administrative tasks, the way we speak to clients, the way patients are treated is going to have AI involved at some level. And I think that may ultimately start to get to the level of personalized medicine, which is going to be
Yes.
not just genetics or genomics based, but you, and we're seeing this with companies like ImproMed. I can't remember if you've had them on there on your podcast already, but you know, they are predicting treatment response to certain chemotherapies with a proprietary pipeline that integrates AI with some other biological data. So like, that's the future to me. We're really going to have prescribed care for the individual patient.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I mean, when I give lectures on customer service, I talk a lot about individualized care, customizable care, to the point where on the other side, pet owners are also using AI technology on their own dogs and cats, for instance, are able to have some of these cameras that can look at their emotional well-being and also working on training them too. So, you know, I feel like it's kind of a, we're working on our end in the veterinary side, and the pet owners are certainly utilizing and seeing how AI can work on their side as well, which I find so fascinating. And, you know, it's such a great time to be in this space. However, let's talk about maybe some potential challenges of AI and adopting it into veterinary medicine. So what are some of the biggest challenges in getting veterinarians to adopt AI-powered solutions? Because I'll tell you this, we can't even change our own heartworm prevention sometimes, let alone...
I totally hear you on that. And I think honestly, being being now in sort of the realm of the business side of this, of trying to have not just friends and colleagues try out an application that we've built, but actually trying to get something out there. We are a tough crowd of individuals to really sort of adopt and try new things. As innovative and as amazing as our group is, we get really stuck in how we do things. And even though we want things to be better, we're really afraid of adoption. So I think that's also where, though, being informed is so, so important. So asking the right questions so that your fears are mitigated are only going to help with adoption into practices. Because whether we like this or not, it's coming. And it's here, really. I mean, you go to VMX or any one of these conferences, I think there was over 35 AI-based tools at VMX or something like that during the booths. And so it's here, but I also am really, really fearful of the amount of teams that, you know, basically blindly adopt platforms without real knowledge of, you know, they didn't ask about HIPAA compliancy. And yes, that's not a factor in veterinary medicine, but are they being compliant? Do we even know what SOC 2 compliance means? Because I can tell you right now, I don't think the large majority of veterinary teams know what that means. It basically a level of security, but just because a platform is secure doesn't mean it's private. And just because they tell you one thing doesn't mean that that's actually what's going on behind the scenes. So I think we really need to start to improve the questions that we're asking the platforms that are coming to us, which includes, what are you doing with my data? How does your platform perform on my data? Because we see this in the human space all the time. They've actually talked about racial and ethical bias. You know, these platforms are only as good as the people that train them. And we as humans have our own biases, which means the computer systems we develop have biases. So we have to be really careful on how we adopt and how things work, not only, okay, on this proprietary data set, but how does that perform at my hospital? And those are some really, really important questions that people need to ask. And I think the last point that I'll just throw out there, which is really a complicated factor that I think our team's really trying to tackle, even though, you know, we've used a medical record summarizer at Animal right now as a first step, what we're really trying to do is build that model that can be used across veterinary teams, but also the sort of level of software that's going to allow all these hospitals to interact with one another. Because we don't do enough talking. And with all the conglomerates out there, plus academics, plus private, nobody talks to one another. And it's a huge problem in the human space that they're trying to tackle. And now we're one of the first groups in the veterinary space to be tackling this as well.
It's interesting. I'd be curious to see how, you know, practice owners or, you know, medical directors will perceive that, you know, because sometimes I feel like there's like competition. They feel like, I don't want to disclose all of my information to other hospitals out there. But I think for the greater good of the profession and what you're describing is really fascinating. It really is. Okay, so we have that. Now, let's talk about, we have busy veterinary workflows that we're talking about. We're talking about some AI tools that are out there. And I talked a little bit about in your bio about Hachiko. So talk to us about that. How does your Hachiko medical records summarization tool work, and how does it help veterinarians?
Yeah, so basically with Hachiko, and I don't know if you know Hachiko or know the story of that dog in particular.
No, tell me. I didn't even know.
Hachiko, we basically decided as a group in our company that we were going to name every product after a famous dog. So we have a specialty consult platform called Balto, named after the famous husky. But
Yes.
Hachiko is a dog from Japan who actually always used to follow his owner, who was a professor, to the Shibuya station. And he would go with his owner, he would wait there. Owner would go to, do his professor stuff, would come home at the end of the day, and then go home together. But every day he would wait all day at that station. And they actually created a big monument for him at that station
Stop.
that people can go and see.
I
So
can't.
what our sort of theory was, because one day, unfortunately, that professor passed away and he was waiting at the station and he never came home. So that was sort of the same thing of our pets, our family members are waiting for us to come home and we want to get people home sooner. So that's why we named it Hachiko. But effectively, with that, Hachiko is a medical record summarizer to start. And what that means is you simply sign up for an account, there's a free trial. And you take any of your PDF records that you get either as a referral, as a specialist, or as a GP, if you've got diagnostics to submit and you've got an entire record that you can quickly export in a PDF, drag and drop that in, whether it's handwritten, whether it's typed, it doesn't matter. And it digests, parses through, and actually understands the clinically relevant data so that it can give you the best summary possible, for your case, for whatever use case it is. You can refine that. We work with some folks, renal specialists, dialysis specialists, that took a 299-page PDF and graphed every single blood work over that 5-year period. That's the level of complexity that we're able to adopt in our
Wow.
platform. And so that's the first step, is it's really providing summarization for a lot of potential clinical utility. At our hospital, we see, our anesthesia technicians using it to sort of review a case before they put a dog out before a surgery, or our ER team when they get a case transfer, or even me when I get a transfer to oncology. But again, we've built this entire network within the application itself that what we're very quickly starting to see and iterate is use cases for this, which is, you want to update a client family every 48 hours. Well, next month, you're going to be able to click a button that basically generates a layman term summary of what happened the last 2 days. And so those kinds of things in clinical implementations is really what we're after, on top of the overarching picture and what we're building later on.
I think of the diabetic cushionoid, a new client that's coming to see me with her 45 pages or his pages of medical records. And I'm not kidding. I would probably spend the usually I what I did is I would take those records home, and the night before in bed, I would go through medical records. So the next day I could be like, do you know how many hours you would be saving me of my sleep because of this?
I do, because honestly, I actually did my own clinical case study, and I to do three cases, it took me 45 minutes to simply just review the records. It now takes me 4.5 minutes. So
What?
it's unbelievable. And it's again, what I want to iterate to here is that, unlike other platforms that are being developed, this is not just ChatGPT in a wrapper. We have built an entire pipeline that understands a veterinary context, which means you can trust it and it's safe. And what's actually really interesting, Adam, is we did an internal study, and our clinicians, like over 30 beta users across the US and Canada, not only rated an accuracy score, which is not the only important metric, but of about 93%. But one of the other really interesting metrics was there's something called semantic similarity, which just means, like, the broad category of automobile can be like cars, boats, whatever you want to say underneath, trucks, et cetera. And when you look at overlap between what Hachiko developed and what Hachiko output compared to what the clinicians output, there was only about a 74% overlap. And we said, hold on, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So we actually took a look further into it. And what we found is 23% of the time, Hachiko actually found more information than the clinician was finding. So the reason for that discrepancy was because it was doing a better job than the clinician. So that's like, that is really one of the key metrics for us that really shows me, a clinician, why it's important to have tools like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the veterinarian that's tuning in right now and they're interested in incorporating, say, AI in general into their practice, where should they start?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of great resources. I think first looking at like your overseeing body. So if you're a specialist, like ACVIM, for instance, if you're a generalist, the AVMA, any sort of local university that has some AI research backing. I will say the University of Guelph is doing a lot of great work, myself included, alongside Dr. Ryan Appleby. You know, we're pretty big about pushing things out there. Cornell's another big one that has a lot of great resources. But honestly, there's a lot of groups too, like Digitale and all these other groups, and even LinkedIn. If you just go start searching and looking around, there's a lot of great information and online courses that you can take. And myself and my co-founder, Dr. Wu, we actually started a course too for anyone that's interested that's listening called Inspirit. Well, it's a company called Inspirit AI, but we've started a AI course for medical professionals, which is very much catered to human medical and veterinary medical professionals. That can be anybody under the professional heading.
Wow, that's fantastic too. So I just wrote that down because I was like, oh, I need to take that. Okay, so as we're wrapping up here, what is, I'm going to hold you to this, what is one key takeaway that you want veterinary professionals out there to remember about AI in their field?
I think for me, the one key thing to remember is that not all AI is created equal. Garbage in equals garbage out. And therefore, make sure that you're asking the right questions or educating yourself on the right questions to be asking when a company comes through your doors. Because at the end of the day, your data is important, your patients are important, and you need to have full trust of what you're executing. So ask the right questions.
That's great. Awesome. And where can we learn more about Animal and get involved with your tools and the research arm?
Yeah, so you can obviously, anybody can add me on LinkedIn. I've got a public profile, but you can also head to www.animl.health. And we've got all of our platforms listed there. We also have a blog that we, every couple of weeks, we have a post called Translational Tensors. Tensor is something in the AI space, and translational because we do human stuff as well. And you can check out any of our research as well.
That's awesome. Dr. Bernard, I'm not going to lie. I learned so much in this podcast. I really did.
Glad. I really appreciate you having me on. It's been great.
You are phenomenal. Have you been? How come we didn't connect sooner? Like, how did we not know each other like before? Well, this is what I love about podcasts. Now we have a new friend. So
I agree. Hit me up anytime. And honestly, for any of the Fetch conferences or anything, if you guys are looking for speakers, I love being there for education. For anybody who's going to the ACVIM this year, I'll be there doing some educational courses as
Absolutely.
Well.
No, we would love to have you. Absolutely. Again, thank you for all the great work that you're doing. So Dr. Bernard, everyone, round of applause. What? Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast and don't be afraid of AI. If you need any help, reach out to him. He's a great resource, and also on LinkedIn, because I follow him over there. You have great content over there. So awesome. Thank you again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.